Hey everybody, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU LPFM Lexington Community Radio, coming to you live from the north side of a very hot Lexington,
very
Kentucky.
Warm.
A little
very,
toasty very here
warm.
In the 100 plus year old Steam Academy.
Spring has sprung.
Name.
Yeah, very, yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Name.
I can't see the mic. My glasses are fogging up in here.
Right.
Nice. Well, I'm Chuck.
I'm Ben.
And thanks for joining us here on Friday. And Saturday, if you're listening to the rebroadcast, we appreciate that.
Yeah.
With us in the studio today, we have a special guest who very luckily is in town at the moment and able to come in and talk with us, comedian Mr. Stuart Huff.
Howdy, boys.
What's going on, Stuart?
Yeah,
how are you, man?
I'm good.
Excellent. Hope it's not too hot in here.
No, I'm fine. I'm getting to that age where when I was younger, I used to prefer cold. I don't know. I used to love cold, snow, and all that. Now I'm just like, forget that stuff. I don't mind the steam.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I have allergies. I still love the cold.
Really? I have bad allergies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how you're in Georgia now.
Athens, Georgia.
Athens, uh-huh. Georgia. How are your allergies in
Horrible.
Athens? Horrible?
Horrible.
What's worse, Lexington, Kentucky or Athens, Georgia?
I think Athens. Just pollen is so... I mean, everything's covered in yellow. And it's horrible.
Deep South.
Yeah, it's really bad, you know.
So, Stuart, can I ask you, where are you from originally?
Campbellsville, Kentucky.
Campbellsville. Can you tell us a little bit about Campbellsville, Kentucky?
You know, I think we left there when I was 7, I believe, and went to Knoxville, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And so my memories there are amazing. My memories of Campbellsville are childhood memories.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And my first clear memory, and I say clear, it's fuzzy. It's definitely fuzzy. But my best friend, who I'm still friends with, Todd, he lives in Elizabethtown, right? No, Bowling Green.
Okay.
Anyway, he had a Dalmatian, and I was in diapers still, so that's, the memory is like real. It might be made up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, or got fuzzy with the Xerox.
Yeah, I might have been told this story. Sorry. I might have been told this story so many times that now it's a memory.
It's become a part of you.
Right. But apparently his Dalmatian liked to pick me up by the diaper. And run through the yard with me. And my parents would freak out. Just, trying to stop. But what I, in my mind, I can see cloud movement, almost like flight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, but maybe that's what, because the story from their point of view is they would freak out, but I would be giggling. And I loved it, mm-hmm. right? So maybe I'm putting that. So another memory from Campbellsville was on the street we lived on, a man was building an airplane in his garage.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember as a kid going and watching him do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a clear memory, which I found out recently. He completed it, and it works.
That's great.
And he owns a license, and he flies it, and blah, blah, blah. Nice. Yeah. So just a lot of weird...
Watch out, Campbellsville.
You see an airplane above Campbellsville.
Yeah. I actually had a woman here in Lexington after a show, I don't know, maybe 7, 8 years ago. She comes up to me and she goes, "Oh my gosh, I'm from Campbellsville and I own a hot air balloon."
All about aviation out there.
Is it, are they trying to get out?
I love her introduction to me.
Like, and I own a hot air balloon.
Right.
I
always thought since I met her, like, you should introduce yourself by saying, "Hi, I'm Stuart and I'm scared of tugboats." You should add one interesting thing about you.
Yeah.
Oh, fun.
You're like,
you know,
I've got a thing about pugs.
Right.
Yeah.
Just kick off the conversation. Because I immediately had 92 questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, what?
Why? Where do you put it?
Right. Her storage unit.
Oh.
That was one of my questions.
That makes sense.
Where
and can I
it?
Take a ride in it?
I didn't ask that because I met her.
Yeah, that's true.
I didn't want to be wet that high as that woman.
Yeah, gotcha.
Apparently, the story was her and her husband retired, or were actually planning on retiring, and one day her husband said to her, "It's dumb that we've been saving money our entire lives and not spending it, not having fun. We should go do something crazy. Is there something you've always wanted to do?" And she said, "I always wanted to ride in a hot air balloon." And he goes, "Well, let's go do it." So they did, and then that led to, "We should buy one of these," which is just insane, you know. And they take it out. It's very expensive to do it.
Oh, yeah, the fuel,
yeah.
It's an insane amount of flame.
Yeah, so twice a year is all they can afford. So they have this thing.
for twice a year?
Twice a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a license you have to get to be a hunter?
I imagine there's got to be a permit you've got to apply for and make sure you're not going to hit somebody or something.
Yeah.
Or you could just crash the Louisville, was it Derby Week hot air balloon race? Right. And just go, it's just like the first unnumbered, unlicensed participant in that race.
Skybomb it.
Yeah.
Well, I went to an event in Albuquerque, New Mexico called the Balloon Fiesta, where it's like the largest collection of hot air balloons in America, and they have a race as part of it to race around the globe. So there's like, I mean, there's this huge open field, and they have turkey legs. It's like a full, you know, thing. But then they do this light up thing where they all at nighttime get together and light up, and it looks really cool.
Yeah.
But as part of it, there's this race around the world hot air balloon competition, and I thought when I went there, kind of, you know, wow, that's a pretty remarkable thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, the people that are arriving back from traveling around the world are kind of arriving back on the same date as this light up thing, so people are kind of like, oh, you went around the world. That's cool. But, oh, my God, look at these balloons over here.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever heard of this Dangerous Sports Club, Dangerous Sports Society?
No.
You ever heard of that?
No.
I can picture in my mind what they do.
Yeah. They. I found out about it in a weird way. The member of Monty Python who passed away, cancer.
I think Graham Chapman, I think, is the only one who's died, yeah.
Yes. He did this remarkable thing where I think it was in Chicago, he thought that they wanted him to just basically introduce the Holy Grail that they were going to watch, right, in this theater. Mm-hmm. And then he got there and realized, he was told, they don't want him just to introduce it. They want him to talk for 45 minutes. And he had a fear of public speaking.
Oh my God!
Oddly enough,
yeah.
So he panicked, but ended up getting through it and kind of liked it. So then he did a tour, and he put out a CD. And I got the CD. And
I do too. I haven't listened to it in a while, but where he just kind of he goes out and just talks to people.
He just talks to people. Yeah. I love the CD because it's so unprofessional. Mm. It's you can tell
it's not routines.
It's not routine.
And it's not even really stories for the most part. There's some stories sprinkled throughout there, but it's just kind of him having a conversation with somebody who's not keeping up their end of the conversation.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So he on that CD he talks about the Dangerous Sports Club, I think it's called, in England, and it's a group of people from all different walks of life, rich, poor, you know, whatever, and they come up with crazy, dangerous things to do. Yeah. They're adrenaline junkies. So I don't know what reminded me of the Albuquerque balloon thing was a guy was arrested because he had the idea he was going to fly an inflatable kangaroo from England to America and hopefully land somewhere near New York.
It's a real manifest destiny.
Yeah. So he had not gotten any license for this. Okay. He had a large inflatable kangaroo. He was in the pouch of it.
Oh, wow.
And a plane passed. He was about, 10,000 feet in the air or something? Mm-hmm, a plane passed and radioed in that there's a crazy man in a kangaroo. And they had to go up and get him because he was in the flight path.
Yeah.
Right?
That's amazing.
Yeah. I don't know, it just reminded, the Albuquerque thing reminded me.
It seems like Australia should have been on his agenda there at some point, should have been on the cartographic map.
I'm sure he bounced back.
To New York, maybe a Big Apple. Would probably be.
That'd be nice.
More appropriate. Yeah.
He got tangled up in the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
And the kangaroo was the only thing that was available. That was all he could afford.
Right. Maybe. He wanted something cooler.
Nice. So Stuart, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about your comedy career. Can I ask you, when did you first start doing comedy?
I'm bad with numbers. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I know it's over 20 years. I was in college. I did not want to be in college. And I can tell you this now, but I didn't know this then, but I didn't want to end up in an office. Mm-hmm. And I felt like if I finished college, that's where I'm going to be. Mm. And so I never wanted to be a comedian. Most of my friends say they always dreamed of it and never dreamed of it. Mm. You know, I wanted to be a writer. And I was writing short stories and never showed them to anybody, even my girlfriend. My parents didn't even know I was doing it. Mm. And I was too embarrassed. And one night I went up and told one of my stories that I thought was funny, and nobody laughed.
where was that at?
They told me, that was in Georgia. And then I immediately, I don't know why, probably because I'm crazy, but I loved it. I just thought, wow, that was incredible. Like, I wanted to throw up. It felt horrible. Everything in my body said, don't do that again. Don't you dare put us through that. But my brain was like, yeah, we're going to do that again as soon as we can. Yeah. You know?
That's fun.
What is that? It's because that's the common story from stand-up comedians is I went up on stage and I bombed. I've heard even Patton Oswalt tell that story where he was doing it in Virginia. And for 3 years, he was the worst stand-up comic of all time. But he kept, and everybody was telling him that, like the patrons, the waitresses, the bartenders, the owners.
Right.
Why do you keep coming back here? Yeah. What is it? Do you think maybe it's like a challenge, or it's like watching somebody ride a bike, you know this is possible, so you just kind of want to be able to do it, or is it adrenaline, do you think?
I think it's maybe different for everybody because of the personality, maybe. But I think that comedians that I know, that I respect, let's put it that way, Patton Oswalt, you know, that comedians that I like, there's a puzzle to this. And when you throw in strangers, it makes the puzzle almost unsolvable because it's random now.
Yeah.
You know, if it's me in a room writing, then it's me and I write, and then I read it and I like it or I don't. Mm. And it's over. It's done.
Yeah.
You know, I show up at a Moose Lodge. I have no clue what I'm walking into. None.
Mm.
You know, so what happened last night really doesn't play into this. I can't, you know, this might be totally different, you know, and there's a joy in that to me.
You can do the exact same material in the exact same fashion on two different nights in the same place and get a completely different reaction
100%
from Thursday to Friday.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. Yeah, it's fascinating.
And Stuart, your material, you know, you're discussing evolution in the South. You're discussing some pretty, what I wish weren't so controversial, but they truly are.
Yeah, me too.
You know, so I'm wondering, you know, from night to night, are there sometimes that you show up at a club and people aren't familiar with your work, and then you do a show, and then when you show up for the second show at the same club, they're like, oh, okay, it's about time for the second show, I guess. Like,
oh, I can tell you a million of those stories. If you want to do some of those stories, I could do a bunch of them.
Sure, yeah. Are there any that stick out in particular? I heard you got punched on stage one night.
I've been punched twice on stage. Yeah, two times someone has come on stage and punched me in the face. Oh,
where was that at?
Macon, Georgia was the first one.
Wow.
Was it a cop?
Okay. I was doing a story. This is a true story. I have two sisters. One is a lesbian, and I donated sperm to her and her wife so they could have a baby. Mm-hmm. So I am an uncle baby daddy.
Yeah. You know?
So, and I had written a piece about this, and in the piece is, of course, funny, you know, just the actual experience of donating sperm, right? But there was also political commentary in it about homosexuality. Mm-hmm. At the time, gay marriage was not legal. So it was, you know, and in Macon, a guy had an issue with it and came on stage and punched me in the face.
Wow.
And it is hard to fight back when you're laughing. It was so idiotic and so redneck, you know, that it was just funny to me. And, you know, Aiken, South Carolina, was the opposite of that experience, where they beat me up real bad in Aiken, like, as in, I had about $800 of dental work that had to be done. Yeah, and that was not funny.
Yeah.
You know, so that was just brutal, you know. But, you know, on the flip side of that, I've walked into bars and nightclubs and where I think to myself, all right, where are the exits? You know, I need to know my escape route here because, you know, because that's the thing with me is I'm not going to change what I say. I don't care where I'm at, you know. So I need to, you know, and I've walked into some of those places and been completely shocked where people come up and they go, man, that was great. You're right, man. Them lesbians, they deserve the same rights, you know. And, you know, I mean, that's just the way it is. And I'm just like, wow. I didn't expect that, and that's fantastic.
You know? Do you think attitudes are changing in the South, or do you think that maybe people just hear that accent and they assume that they're going to be homophobic.
I think, without a doubt, it's changing in the South. It absolutely is changing. Just in my lifetime alone, even comedy, you know, you can tell a difference in comedy in the South. It's definitely changing. The accent, you know, the Southern accent is the dumb one. You know,
right.
The French accent is the romantic one,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all know this. So, and I use my accent as a tool on stage. So if I'm in Aspen, you know, Colorado, and I walk up on stage and say, "How y'all doing?" Immediately they judge me.
Hmm.
Immediately. And I know they do, and I use it against them,
mm-hmm.
You know? And I like that feeling. I can toy with them, you know? And then when they come up to me after the show, which Seattle, Portland, L.A., you know, what have you, Aspen, those type of places, lots of people come up and they'll say, "Oh, I did not expect for you to be that open-minded from the South." And then I get the opportunity to say, "Really? So you have judgmental opinions about the South, do you? You open-minded person here?"
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side, when I walk up on stage in Macon, Georgia, and say, "How y'all doing?" they think I'm one of them.
Mm.
So it works against me, because a minute and a half later, then I'm saying things that they don't agree with. It's a difference when someone from New York goes to Macon, and with a New York accent, Macon automatically doesn't like them, you know. There's a territorial battle there, you know. With me, they feel betrayed. And I think that's the reason that I have encountered a lot of stuff like that. I mean, I had a guy in Arkansas threw a flip-flop at me. And then, I'm going to be delicate because we're on the air here, but
please.
Then he went out in the parking lot and found my car and defecated on my on my vehicle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Where in the vehicle?
On the windshield.
Wow.
On the windshield.
That's impressive.
It's very impressive. And there was a part of me that was like, wow.
That's more impressive. That's the most impressive place to do that.
Yeah.
Look at the roof or the hood.
That's the most like id thing I could think to possibly do.
It's like, is he thinking you might not see it, so I better get it on his
Yeah. Here's a joke for you.
Right. Fantastic.
So, Stuart, what do you think it is? And you know, I feel like, and this is something that's been kind of an undercurrent in the South for a long time, is what do you think it is that drives this kind of anti-intellectualism in America that's so predominant?
I would like to back up and say this, that one of the things, Campbellsville, Kentucky is where I was born. I went to Knoxville. I lived in Georgia. I lived in North Carolina. I've lived in Florida. And when I was in, like, say, when I was young, when I was a teenager, and I've always liked to read, you know, so I would read these books, and even Southern authors, you know, Faulkner and Carson McCullers and Flannery O'Connor, you know, they even presented the South as an ignorant kind of place, you know, and so I thought growing up that as soon as I get out of here, then I will be surrounded by smart people. You know, when I graduated from high school, I immediately drove to New England because I thought it's Ivy covered colleges. And I thought people were probably discussing Socrates in McDonald's, you know. And I've been in all 50 states, and I can tell you, it is not that way. There are dumb people in every single place I've ever been in my life. There's idiots and rednecks. There's rednecks. First time I drove into Oregon, I felt like, this is Kentucky.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? This is first time I ever did comedy in upstate New York, okay? I left the city. I left New York City, right? And I'm driving on a back road, and I came over a hill. Okay, there was a man standing in the center of the road with overalls on, no shoes, and no shirt. Okay, and he had a shotgun. And when I came over that hill, he leveled that shotgun and pointed it right at my car. And I hit the brakes. I went, I dove into the passenger seat. And I was thinking in my head, you're going to have to reverse, put it in reverse. But then I thought, you can't see. You're going over a hill. And I'm trying to figure out what I should do in this situation, right? All my windows are down because it's a spring day. It's nice. And he came up to my window and said, "Don't worry, you're not the person I'm looking for." And I thought, am I in Alabama or New York? Which
you're in the Adirondacks.
Right.
Yeah, not in Appalachia.
So, I mean, I think it would be great if all the dumb people lived in the South. It'd be fantastic. Then we would know where they were.
Yeah.
You know? Right. And then I'd, you know, we could actually fix a problem, but that's not the case. So, but I do think there's something to the South. It's a feeling of tribalness to the South. You ain't one of us.
You think the Confederacy kind of plays into that a little bit?
Yeah, some. Yeah. You know, I've also read, I don't know, I've read theories that it's Scotch-Irish descent, you know, and the Scotch-Irish came down and immediately started going south to get away from people. And that's what I've read. I don't know how true that is, but the music is definitely Scotch-Irish. Yeah. And, you know, so, but... There's a feeling in the South when you're on stage sometimes that you're either with me, you're one of me, or you're not. Mm. And if you're not, I don't want to listen to you. I don't want to be here. And I don't get that feeling in anywhere else. Oregon, you know, Wisconsin, Albuquerque. I've been to Albuquerque a bunch. I do not get the feeling of you ain't one of us.
Wow.
That's a Southern thing.
Do you ever get audiences arguing with each other, people for your material and people against your material, and you're just kind of watching them do it out while you're doing your set? Oh, yeah.
That happens maybe once a month to various degrees, you know. They, someone will applaud something I do, something I say, you know, and then another person from the other side of the room will yell at the person that applauded and say, shut up.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, it's, but right now, since the election, it has become completely, there is no middle ground on stage. Yeah. There's no middle ground.
Dichotomies abound. Yeah.
So it almost feels like the audience wants to know right away, are you Hillary or are you Trump? And they're going to be upset if you're not on their side. You know, left-wing audiences, same way. You know, they don't want to hear anybody that voted for Trump. They don't want to hear their position. They don't want to hear why they did. You know, and right-wing doesn't want to hear why you didn't vote for Trump. And, you know, it's very divisive right now. So...
Interesting. Well, just in case you're just joining us, you're listening to Bluegrass Bios here on 93.9 WLXU. We're here in the studio with comedian Stuart Huff, who's going to be at Comedy Off Broadway this weekend on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night. Are you doing one or two shows?
One show on Thursday, two on Friday, two on Saturday.
Great. And about 7 p.m.
I think they start at 7:15, 7 p.m. You look, double check me on that. I'm bad with numbers.
Sure. Yeah, that's no problem. So, Stuart, I wanted to ask you about the Sick of Stupid tour.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit about that and kind of how that came about and what your mission was with that?
Yeah, I know. And I'll also tell you that it's been renamed. It's the thought behind it was there are a few people that are, I'm going to call it, out on stage, as in they express their opinions, you know, with jokes, right? But there's, in the South, it seems like there's not a lot of Southern people, Southern comedians, that are going up on stage and doing material like Evolution in school, you know. They might believe that off stage, but they're not going to take that chance on stage. So the thought behind the tour was, let's get a couple of friends together that are saying something and their opinions and go to towns. Because I believe tiniest towns in Kentucky, there's 200 people that want to hear smart comedy. Like you said a minute ago, the anti-intellectualism. I agree with that 100%. We, for some reason, we don't even respect, you know, like I've been working on a piece lately about, you know, advertising. You, as far as I can tell, you never see anybody who's known for their intelligence advertising a product. It's all sports figures, musicians. You never see, this is Neil deGrasse Tyson.
That was the first name that popped into my
really?
Head.
Really?
Yes, that's who I was picturing when you said that.
When I've been looking at space all day, I get hungry.
Head on down to Arby's.
Right. And Arby's fixes it. You know, you don't see that because there's not enough respect in my, from what I'm assuming that these advertising people would use anybody that they thought would sell the product. That's, they're looking for some human that's going to sell their product.
Yeah.
So Brett Favre for Wrangler jeans or Stephen Hawking for Wrangler jeans?
Yeah.
Which one's going to sell more jeans?
Right.
Because I don't think Wrangler really cares which one it would be. So it's kind of a reflection of where the respect is.
Hmm.
Right now, sports people, musicians, actors, actresses, this is what, you know, we respect, you know. Like, people say you should respect your teachers. Why? No one else does.
Yeah.
You know? They have no respect at all. I mean, my wife's a teacher, and I make more money than her. Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I tell jokes to drunk people that eat cheese dip. She's in charge of our future.
Yeah. You know? So, Stuart, who would you say is the funniest person in your life right now?
Oh.
You can say you. If you think it's you. I am not.
I don't think I'm a very funny person. I really don't. I'm a stubborn person is what I am, you know. The funniest person that I've ever met is now in a mental institution. I grew up with him, and Rob, I don't want to say his last name, but in Knoxville, he was, I don't know what technically what was quote-unquote wrong with him. Mm-hmm. You know that thing we all have where you kind of know what to do and what not to do in a certain situation. Mm-hmm. And even if you're going to do the wrong thing, you know you did the wrong thing.
Like social mores.
Yeah. Just you don't. Like if I went into your home and met your parents for the first time, I wouldn't ask to take a shower.
Yeah.
That would be odd.
Yeah.
And rude. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rob didn't have that. That's when he met my parents the very first time. I was a teenager, you know, and I introduced Rob. This is my dad. And Rob grabbed my father's ear and started rubbing it. And he just goes, "Those are really big ears." And my father, who's a stoic, great guy, but very quiet, stoic kind of person, he stared at me the entire time. And then Rob goes, "Well, you guys mind if I take a shower?" And my dad said, "Sure, go ahead." Mm-hmm. And Rob went and took a shower.
Wow.
And then my dad looked at me and said, "I do not want you ever to hang out with that boy again." You know? So I loved Rob, and he's the funniest human being I've ever met, just because he had no filter.
Yeah. Well, you know? Who else, when you were growing up, kind of influenced you to do comedy? Who were some folks that you saw and thought, okay, I wanted to be a writer, but this is what I want to do?
I loved Richard Pryor. I had gotten a hold of some Richard Pryor cassette tapes, and I loved Richard Pryor, right? I also loved Carlin. I had some Carlin stuff. Mm-hmm. But I loved Bob Newhart. I loved Bob Newhart. I had all his vinyl records, you know.
I've got some too, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I still love Bob Newhart.
Oh, yeah.
I think Bob Newhart's a great comedian. But all these people, Eddie Murphy was big when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, right? Yeah. He was huge. But all of these people seemed larger than life. Like the thought that I could do that it's like being an astronaut. You don't dream of being an astronaut, really.
Yeah.
You know? And then I heard Woody Allen's stand-up. And a lot of people don't even know he did stand-up. Mm. But Woody Allen's stand-up was, he stammered, kind of like Bob Newhart.
Yeah.
He had a hesitant stutter. He seemed very, very nervous. And I thought, I could actually be that bad. I didn't realize till years later that's a developed character that he was playing.
Yeah.
But I think Woody Allen was the first comedian that I actually thought, he's so nervous that that's attainable, you know. Mm. But even as a teenager, I didn't think I want to do that. Yeah. I just didn't, you know. And now I think the best comedians that ever lived, if you said Lenny Bruce or Carlin, I wouldn't argue with either of those. I flip-flop back and forth on those.
What about right now? Who are you listening to?
Dana Gould.
Oh, yeah. We both listened to his podcast.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, love the podcast.
I think Dana Gould's easily top three comedians working today. I have not seen or heard Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yep. I've never...
How have you managed to avoid him?
I know. I stopped listening to comedy, except for Carlin and Bruce and Pryor and Dana Gould, people I already know their work.
Mm.
You know, I've already memorized their work. So I listen to them. But new comedians, I don't want their thoughts in my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Totally.
If Bill Burr writes a bit about evolution in school, I don't want to hear it. Because I'm doing a bit about that. Mm-hmm. And I know that if I hear his thoughts are in my head. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to steal his jokes.
Sure.
But it might influence the way I think about something. So I know if he writes a bit about it and I write a bit about it, they're not going to be similar. They can't be.
Yeah.
You know, we're two different humans.
There's no subliminal appropriation.
Right. Yeah. So I stopped. I mean, I've heard Louis C.K.'s great. Mm-hmm. I've heard Bill Burr's great.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know. And, you know, like, if I work with people, then I watch them. Like, when I worked with Maria Bamford, you know, I had...
I love her.
Yeah. And she's friends love her.
Yeah.
But I had...
How do you not love her, really?
Yeah. I had purposely not watched Maria Bamford. Okay. I'd stayed away from her. Because I don't want her thoughts in my head. Mm-hmm. And then when I worked with her, then I thought, okay, well, I'll watch her now. And I was just like, this is gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is beautiful comedy.
Where did you work with her?
The first time I worked with her was in Atlanta, mm-hmm. at the Punchline in Atlanta. Yeah. And, you know, so I will do that. If I'm working with someone, then I watch them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, other than that. So Dana Gould, I think, is, you know, I also love Colin Quinn.
Oh, yeah.
And Colin, I've never met Dana Gould, but Colin and I worked together three or four times. And that is a fantastic comedian and one of the most laid-back, cool guys I've ever met.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to ask you, Stuart, because I know you're a road comedian, and that's a term that keeps getting put around. How many days of the year do you spend on the road?
That's hard to say. Last year, I just did my taxes, so last year I was on the road 48 weeks. 48 weeks, yeah. And that is like, you know, like I'm in Lexington right now, right? Mm-hmm. So then Sunday I'll wake up and get on the road and drive back to Athens, okay? So and then I'll get home Sunday evening. Monday I'll be home. Tuesday I leave and head to Toronto. Mm-hmm. So then I'll be in Toronto and Ottawa. I won't come home in between those, of course, you know. And then after that I come home, and I'll be home for 3 days, and then I take off again. Mm. So it's like that pretty much all year. It's like I'll be home for one day, and then some days I'm home for 4 days, and then I leave again.
How do you kill time when you're driving?
Oh, that's my favorite. I think if I quit comedy, there's a few things I would almost like addiction level miss. And I think driving would be one of them. I really think that I've been off the road a few times in my career where I moved to LA for 1 year, and you don't drive that much, like road work.
Yeah.
I would get in my car when I lived in LA and drive up the coast 3 hours, turn around and drive back home.
Wow.
Because I miss driving. I'm alone. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I turn my phone off and, you know,
yeah.
I just think. That's all I do. So I drive and think.
Is that where you write most of your jokes?
Most of the jokes are written in the car, ideas written in the car. And then I'll get somewhere where I can write and flush them out. But yeah, I love the alone time, you know, me behind the wheel, nobody else.
What are some of the other addictive things that you'd miss?
I think, you know, it's the things that most people, I think, would think that we're horrible about this job, like hotel rooms. Mm-hmm. I feel so at home in a hotel room.
Sure.
I wake up to pee and it's, you know, 5 a.m. I know exactly where everything is.
Yeah. There's my teacup, right. Give me a Bible.
Yeah. But I have woken up in my own house and been confused and panicked.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? Oh,
I got to make the bed myself.
Right.
Do you feel like when you went on the tour, the Sick of Stupid tour, it was a different dynamic, kind of traveling with people?
Yeah. And I think it wore on all three of us kind of in different ways. Mm-hmm. There was some positives to it without a doubt, but I don't know, you get used to any lifestyle, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just not used to being around people 24/7.
Now, what are some of the things that you definitely would not miss if you were to stop doing stand-up? Getting beaten up or having flip-flops thrown at you, notwithstanding.
You know, I'll tell you, oddly enough, when someone is going to come on stage and punch me in the face, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying I like it. I don't like it, right? but at least there's a commitment there. Yeah. You know,
you got a reaction out of somebody.
You've moved them in some way,
right? Now we are over the crap of we're going to argue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What I don't like is when I'm on stage and there's a table that just won't shut up, and they're talking to themselves loudly, and it's rude behavior, and people. I don't know if they've ever, you know, comedians like to say people have, they don't know how to act in public anymore, but I don't know if they ever did. I mean, what do I know? Maybe, you know, maybe Pryor had to deal with this crap in 1968. What do I know? You know, but I read an article recently where, I don't know, 6 months ago, where the New York Philharmonic had to stop a performance because somebody answered their cell phone and wow. talked on it.
Wow.
Yeah, I've seen people do that in at shows and at, it's stand-up shows, even.
It's incredible. Do you feel like Canadian audiences are any different than U.S. audiences?
Canadian audiences, first of all, here's the major difference that I've experienced with Canadian audiences, is the Canadian audiences come to see comedy and have a drink. U.S. audiences come to drink and see comedy, you know, and minor difference that it is, major difference if you're a performer, you know, they come out because they, in Canada, the shows I've done, they like comedy, you know, so you get a lot more compliments in Canada. Like, people will say things to me like, I enjoyed the way you structured that set. It's like, what?
Yeah. No, it had good flow to it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, you have really smooth transitions.
Your syntax is on point. That's amazing to hear.
Yeah.
So, yeah, do you ever get any heckling or anything in Canada at all? Or is that...
Yeah, the heckles I've had in Canada are to correct me.
Grammar?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it is. It's quite funny. And it goes back to the anti-intellectualism. Canada, like one thing that I've noticed just driving around Canada, their street signs are more, what's the proper way to say it? They have a higher elevated vocabulary than the U.S. street signs. It's fascinating.
What's an example of that?
Obstruction ahead. That obstruction ahead is a Canadian street sign. Ours says bump. You know, compulsory.
Oh yeah.
Their seatbelt has a picture of a seatbelt, and then it says compulsory.
Wow.
So, my theory is, if you grew up. I don't care how low the education system is, right? You could be in the lowest education county in Kentucky, right? And if you every day see the word compulsory, you now know the word compulsory. It's the language that's around you. So if advertising actually used, say, sixth grade level, right?
Yeah.
Instead of got milk. You know,
or I'm thinking click it or ticket.
Click it or ticket.
What we've got, yeah.
We're making things into rhymes. I mean, it's just, it's dumbing down, you know. Canada, the places I've been, they seem to, like, just, if you don't know what this means, then you need to learn what this means.
Right.
Yeah.
This is the way we're doing it. And their advertising even has a little bit of a higher feel to it, you know. And I'm not saying they are the promised land or anything like that.
Yeah.
Sure.
Where's the furthest away place you've done comedy?
Well, distance-wise, I don't know. I've done some shows in Alaska. I got stranded, or almost got stranded, in Mexico one time, which was gorgeous.
How did that? Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'd love the story now.
Is tequila involved?
No.
Okay.
It should have been. I made the giant mistake of accepting to perform on a Carnival cruise ship, which, nothing against whatever, if you like cruises, fine.
Sure.
But my act should not be on a Carnival cruise ship. And a well-meaning guy hired me. It paid very well. And I didn't know at the time that they were going to hate me as much as they did. But so it's a little bit of a long story, but here it is. I get a plane ticket from Carnival. I'm going to fly from Atlanta, Georgia to Cancun. Okay. I'm told by a friend who works for them all the time, get off the plane, go to the taxi stand, say, I want the Carnival cruise ship. They will take you to it. Okay, I do this right now. I'm only going to be on there for two nights. Mm-hmm. So I'm packed very light. I have a little overnight bag with a couple of books in it, a writing pad, some underwear, you know, and I have a suit because I have to wear a suit. Mm-hmm. So I have a suit in a suit bag, right? And I get off the plane and I say Carnival Cruise Ship. Guy takes me to a dock. Mm-hmm. And I pay the man. I go up. I'd like the Carnival Cruise Ship. It's not here. It doesn't dock here. I'm like, what? Another taxi driver says, I know where it is. I'll take you. I'm like, all right, I get another taxi, right? He takes me to another one. I pay the guy, get off. Carnival Cruise Ship, it's not here. You know, there's no Carnival Cruise Ship at this dock. Another taxi driver, I know where it is, I'll take you. And now I'm starting to be like, ugh, yeah, I don't, should have. But what choice do I have?
Yeah.
I can either stand here or trust this guy. So I get into his cab, he takes me, I pay him, and he dumps me off. Carnival Cruise Ship, nah, about a year far away from the Carnival Cruise Ship, right?
Oh, wow.
So now I've paid three taxi cab drivers. I have almost no money left, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to this guy at the dock, and he says, it's not in Cancun. It's in Cozumel, Mexico, mm-hmm. Which is south of here. Yeah. And I'm like, well, how am I going to get there? And he goes, I don't know. How much money you got? And I said, $2.80. He goes, you're not going to get there. And so he actually loaned me some money.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really cool. And he got me on a worker bus. Mm-hmm. So now I'm on a worker bus. I didn't even know what it was when I was put on it, right? Mm-hmm. It's stopping every 10 miles. And almost everybody on the bus will get off. And then a bunch of more people would get on.
And then it's just you.
And then it's crazy. And wow. It's just like all the, it's literally a worker's bus. It's workers that travel, you know. And I'm beginning to panic because we're stopping every 8 to 10 miles. There's no way I'm going to make it in time. This boat's going to leave. I'm going to be in Mexico. Mm-hmm. I have no cell phone. This is before cell phones, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm really panicked. And I come up with this plan. I thought, all right, here's what I'll do. Wherever this bus stops, I'm going to get off. Mm-hmm. And the Carnival cruise ship is gone. Forget mm-hmm. about it, Stuart. You're stranded in Mexico. I'm going to find the beach, and I'm going to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. That's plan number one. Plan number two, I'll get up, and then I'll trade my suit for some food. Mm-hmm. And then once my belly is full and I've had sleep, then I'm going to panic. Okay. So I must have, I don't know why, now that I came up with a plan of what I'm going to do, mm-hmm. my brain must have relaxed, I guess, because I fell asleep on the worker bus. I wake up. There's a woman sitting next to me. She's holding a live chicken, and she's shaking me, and she's talking to me in Spanish, right? And we're just talking about the Spanish station here. Mm-hmm. I don't speak Spanish,
sure.
So I don't know what she's saying, and she's got this chicken, and you know what? So I pull out a piece of paper and I draw a ship on the piece of paper, and I hand it to her, and she draws a house.
It's like a Dadaist,
right? Exchange. And I'm like, no, not how. You know, I put an X through the house, and I'm not making this story up. I put an X through the house. She puts an O through my ship. And now I'm like, no, and I scribble all over everything. I just scribble, uh-huh. And then I start to draw the Carnival logo, mm-hmm. right? And then she recognizes it and just freaks out. And she's like all happy and everything. She points to me, points to the logo, gives me a thumbs up. And I'm confused. I'm like, all right. All right. So 30, 45 minutes later, this is way after the Carnival's cruise ship should have left. Right. I'm hours. I'm 45 minutes beyond the time. But I should have been there 4 hours ago to check in. Mm-hmm. Right?
Right.
So at some point, we stop the bus. She grabs my arm, pulls me off, and we start running. Okay? It's a little bitty city, you know? Mm-hmm. We go down the street, take a right, take a left. I'm following her, running, whatever. She's still got the chicken. And we turn a corner, and there it is in the harbor. It's the Carnival cruise ship.
Wow.
It's still there. They had an engine problem, and they had to get a piece replaced.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm freaking out now. She's freaking out. She's pointing. She's all happy, right? Mm-hmm. I give her my suit and my overnight bag just out of exhilaration. I handed her everything that I had in my hands, and I ran towards the boat.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. They have to send a dinghy to come get me.
Yeah.
And I have to climb a rope ladder to the entrance to the ship because it's already, you know, stopped. Yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. So they are furious with me. They're cussing me out. They're very mad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I apologize up and down, blah, blah, blah. Now I don't have my suit. They're mad about that, too. I'm performing in jeans and a T-shirt, right? Hmm. I get up there. I start doing my act, which is, you know, pro-love and we should accept immigrants and, you know, all this kind of thing. They're not happy with this at all. This is not what they wanted.
Yeah.
La-da-da. So I finished the show. They're, I mean, furious, yelling and screaming at me. They helicopter me off the ship. They send a helicopter to get rid of me. And they fly me to Texas.
Oh, my. Right. On a chopper from Cozumel?
Chopper.
Oh, my gosh.
And I get home, and then I realize they should have sent me a ticket from Atlanta to Cancun. Mm-hmm. And then I should have gotten on a smaller plane from Cancun to Cozumel. Mm-hmm. That's the way that trip is supposed to work.
Yeah.
They did not send me the second ticket. It was their fault.
Yeah.
So then my manager had to fight to get them to pay me, you know, because they weren't going to pay me because I broke contract. Mm-hmm. I wasn't wearing a suit and I did inappropriate material.
Yeah. Right?
So eventually I got the money. But the story to me is that woman, you know,
yeah,
a stranger,
mm-hmm,
notices
with a chicken.
With a chicken. She's clearly got plans.
Yeah.
For the chicken.
For the chicken.
Yes.
She notices that I'm a thumb in this situation. I don't fit. There must be something wrong.
Hmm.
She figures out what it is and then helps me, you know. And that's one of the things that I didn't anticipate when I started doing this. To be quite honest with you guys, now that I'm 22, 23, 24 years into this, it was a mistake. Me choosing to do comedy was a mistake. I should have stayed in school. I should have been a writer. I should have been a professor with tenure and insurance and a bank account. And I should have been one of those people that complains that, you know, I haven't had a week off in a year or whatever, you know. Instead, I've done this. I have no money. I have no health insurance. I can't even afford health insurance, you know, under Obamacare, you know. Yeah. And, you know, I have nothing. I have no retirement plan at all. But what I've done is I've been in all 50 states. I've met amazing human beings, right wing and left wing. I mean, my car broke down in Montana one time. I had no money, no credit, no nothing. Zero. Right. Mm-hmm. And a guy in a truck pulled over, started talking to me, you know, and he goes, yeah, I think your alternator's gone, buddy. I think that's the problem. And I said, well, all right, well, I'm glad I know. I can't afford it. And he goes, all right. And he towed me to his farm. Right. And he and his brother fixed my car while I worked on his farm to pay off the cost of the alternator. I was there for 10 days, you know.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we argued politics constantly. You know, he was a Bush fan, and I wasn't. And we argued and at the dinner table and stuff. But it didn't stop that man from helping me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've broken down. I stayed at a guy's house in Texas. You know, I stayed at a guy's house in the panhandle of Florida. Car breaks down. A guy comes to get me, right, and tows me in, right, and he said, this is like 4 a.m, okay, and he says, well, where are you going to stay? And when I say he, I mean, he was, at the time, I was probably 35, he was easily no older than 25, mm-hmm, young kid, you know, and he said, where are you going to stay tonight? I said, I'll sleep on the ground, I don't have any money for a hotel, right? He goes, well, you can sleep on my couch, you know. Mm-hmm. So I go into his trailer, and I'm sleeping on his couch, okay? I'm woken up by an infant who's holding a real hammer, okay?
Wow.
He's holding a real hammer and cussing correctly. I didn't know to laugh or cry. This kid cussed. He used cuss words correctly,
gotcha,
right?
Yeah.
And it was sadly hilarious,
yeah,
right? And I stayed there while this guy fix my car, you know? And I had the money to pay him at least for that, you know, that time. And then they found out I was a comedian, blah, blah, blah. So his entire family comes over to meet the comedian, this and that. And then the last night, I was there for 3 nights. The last night I was there, they cooked a spread. I mean, we had ham and green beans and gravy and mashed potato. I mean, they didn't have the money for that.
Right.
But I was a guest in their house, and they just went all out, you know. And when you encounter something like that, then, you know, that to me is amazing. That is profit. Mm-hmm. You know, I believe there are many different ways to make a profit in your life, you know. So I have no bank account. I struggle paying my bills, no health insurance, no retirement plan, certainly no savings account, right? But I've made a lot of profit in this, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think the message of love and tolerance and at least discussion and altruism and acceptance that I think your comedy really at the core of it embodies, it's remarkable. And it's a rare thing, I think, in this time and age. People having those real discussions and really challenging people.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And thank you for going out and being on the front lines and doing what you do. Because I think you're right. I think, you know, all jokes aside, I think when you preach love and peace and understanding, I think it all comes back tenfold.
Yeah. I think it's something. My favorite compliment is when someone comes up to me after the show and says, you and I don't agree, but I really liked what you did.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's my favorite, because that means that someone sat there and didn't agree with the words, but appreciated the message and blah, 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 you know. And I would like to say that I would be that open-minded, that I could sit in an audience and listen to a comedian who I disagreed with every single thing they say. But I got to be honest. You know, I've seen a few comedy shows like that, and they bug the crap out of me. I just I just get so irritated at this person who's preaching hate and and, you know, all that. And so then I realize when someone comes up to me and says, I don't agree with you, but I really liked it, then I realize I got a lot of work to do to get to that place, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I think at the heart of it, I don't care what side you are on politically, if we stop caring about each other, we don't have a shot. It's over. You know, you gotta care.
It's true.
You know, period. Stand there and say, you know, you don't even know what you're talking about. Now, let me go buy you a drink.
That's great. I love that.
You know,
well, Stuart, so can you let people know? So you'll be at Comedy Off Broadway tonight, Friday, and then also on Saturday, playing two shows. And then where can people check out your comedy if they've never listened to it before?
You know, I'm on, what is it called? iTunes, right? And
probably Amazon.
Spotify.
Amazon Digital and all that.
Yeah. I mean, I have a CD label. It's based out of Lexington, by the way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. On Tour Records. And they have a website that I'm on there, too. And they do a good job of getting it all on the digital stuff, because I don't really know what all that stuff is.
You
know?
And do you have a website? Is StuartHuff.com?
Yeah, StuartHuff.com. S-T-E-W-A-R-T.
E-W.
E-W.
Gotcha.
Yeah, E-W. H-U-F-F.com. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm working on... I just recorded another CD, and I'm working on this idea that I have. We started filming it. It's I want to make like a comedy documentary about is truth important, you know? And I want it to be vague, you know. I don't because I have opinions on this, but I don't think I have answers on this, you know.
Well, I can tell you personally, I think if something's not true, it's not funny, really. If somebody says something and it's just a falsehood or an outright lie, then I'm just way too distracted by that to find the humor in it. So,
yeah, I'm with you on that. A lot of times I'll watch a comic and I don't believe them, so I don't laugh.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Like Larry the Cable Guy. Like, this guy isn't really country.
He's not really a cable guy.
Yeah, well, David Cross's letter to him is one of my favorite things ever. Anyway.
Yeah,
yeah. Don't listen to David Cross. That'll definitely seep into your into your head.
Yeah, I've not listened to David Cross. I've heard great things about him, and
he's great too.
Yeah. Well, so I guess we should wrap things up.
Yeah, yeah.
Are we done?
We are, yeah.
Oh, dear.
I know, time's flying by.
Yeah.
Well, Stuart, thank you again so much for coming in and talking with us about
I loved it.
All kinds of stuff. This was awesome. And anytime you're in town, please come on by.
Absolutely.
Come back and chat.
Yeah, if you got a show coming up in and around Lexington and you can't make it in, let us know so we can tell people about it, where to find you, and all that stuff. And if you missed any part of today's show, we're on again tomorrow, 11 to 1. And then we're also up on iTunes, and we'll be on LexingtonCommunityRadio.org, and we're on SoundCloud, and the app is up. The app is up.
Ooh.
Indeed.
Yes, in the Google Play Store and the iTunes Store and all that.
If you search for WLXU 93.9.
Yeah, we got to talk to them about the tags.
Yeah,
so okay. WLXU and search for that.
Well, nonetheless, thank you so much, Stuart, again
for
coming in.
Me.
And good luck with your shows tonight out at Comedy Off-Broadway and tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And good luck out there on the road. Be safe. And if you need somebody to back you up in Georgia and we happen to be around, give us a call.
Done. I will.
If you want to let Stuart crash on your couch, how can they get in touch with you?
You can actually email me through my website.
Cool.
You know? And I don't know why, you know, I'll get emails and then I answer them. You know, like it comes to me. It doesn't go to a manager or anything. It comes to me. And people always seem shocked by that. Like, what are you, crazy?
You
answered my letter.
I'm Tom from Macon, Georgia. I don't know if you remember me, but open this attachment. It's a cyber punch.
Right.
Count. You may know me as the chicken woman from Cozumel.
God, I would love to hook up with that woman again.
That's amazing.
I had your suit clean. I thought that's what you wanted me to do. It's ready for you.
That's awesome. Well, awesome. Well, thanks again, Stuart. And thanks to everybody else out there for listening. You've been listening to Bluegrass Bios here with Stuart Huff. Nonetheless, we'll be back next week. But until then, have a great week. Take care of each other. And we'll see you out there. Peace.